Hi, I'm Rick Schwartz.
Buenos dias, world. I'm Marco Wendt.
Welcome to Amazing Wildlife, where we explore unique stories of wildlife from around the world and uncover fascinating animal facts. This podcast is a production of iHeartRadio's Ruby Studio and San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, an international nonprofit conservation organization which oversees the San Diego Zoo and Safari Park. Marco, in our last episode, we learned about the impacts of wildlife trafficking and heard our friend Kim tell us all about the many things the female king cobra endured before ending up at the San Diego Zoo.
Yeah, you know, that's right. I know it can be kind of a hard story to hear, but really happy she's safe now and hopefully finds a mate soon.
And hopefully she likes that new mate.
Right? I know that was something I found interesting when Kim was talking to us about it. Mate selection isn't just a male and female crossing paths and, you know, that's it. I mean, similar to humans, right? I mean, many species show us that both mates have to be mutually interested in each other.
Exactly, exactly. And she said that the female could reject him for reasons that we don't even know. But often, a female animal of any species is looking for the best match to make sure her offspring will do well.
And that's a great spot to introduce today's topic.
Yes, it is, Marco. It is indeed, because today we are diving into female leadership in the animal kingdom.
But not just the obvious who's in charge leadership, right? I mean, today, we're also talking about the behaviors and actions of a single female that can influence an entire family of animals.
That's right. We're talking about lions, gorillas, elephants, meerkats, lemurs, and even killer whales today.
Whoa, wait, wait, wait. Killer whales too?
Yes, because we happen to have someone with us who has had a career full of working with all sorts of wildlife from all over the world, even the killer whale.
I am Christy Burtis, Vice President of Wildlife Care at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Christy, you came all the way to us for this interview instead of us going to the Safari Park. But real quick, before we get into all the cool things about female animals, what exactly, VP of what?
Vice President of Wildlife Care at the Safari Park.
So what does that mean? That sounds very important. I know what you do, but I want you to explain it to our audience.
It's a very important role, I got to say. So we're really stoked that you're here taking the time to talk to us, Chris.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I think every role in our organization is extremely important, but I feel very honored to lead our wildlife care department at the Safari Park. So we have over 200 wildlife care specialists that take care of over 3,000 animals that represent over 300 species.
Wow. So just a little bit of responsibility on your shoulders.
Just a little bit. What I love about our responsibility is that no day is the same. Every day is a little bit different. And of course, the conservation work that our organization does is so incredibly important, but also the opportunity to connect with our guests, to share the conservation work that we do. And of course, the ability to come into our park to visit areas of our park that represent places all around the world that our guests could potentially never have the opportunity to go to and see the animals that we have in our park, I think is just an amazing opportunity.
No, it really is. It really is. And I think to go into why you're here for us today, not only is it all the cool stuff we do for conservation, our audience knows. Amazing Wildlife's audience knows we do great conservation work, right? And they know we know a lot about animals. But having you here at the table right now for us and for our audience is an opportunity to learn a lot that maybe goes unnoticed about animals and animal behavior. So I'm really excited that you're here, honestly, because this is going to be a really cool conversation.
Oh, it's probably one of my favorite things to talk about is behavior, and especially about females.
There you go. Yeah. And so it's a great segue.
Yeah, me too. 100%. This is great. Especially for me in particular, thinking about the fluidity of gender roles in wildlife as well. It's not the typical patriarchy that you see in other situations. There's a lot more going on in wildlife. And you have some pretty wicked examples that you were just kind of hinting at earlier in a conversation. Can you speak a little bit about them?
Sure. You know, I've worked in the zoological world for over 3 decades now, and I just have always been fascinated with animal behavior. And so it's really, really interesting. You know, we were talking a few minutes ago about matriarchal societies, patriarchal societies, and I just find it fascinating that with matriarchal societies, I think sometimes we think about dominance or aggression, and I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I think that it's more about leadership and influence, and when we really look at it, it really comes down to behavior. And right. so what is the purpose of matriarchal behavior and looking at it from a physiological standpoint? Like, why are females engaging in those behaviors and what is the purpose? And the purpose is all about survival. It's all about survival for the individual. But more importantly, it's usually about survival for the family.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And actually, I was just thinking, guys, for all the little kids that are listening right now, when you're talking about matriarchal, like, what do you mean exactly when we're talking about that?
Matriarchal is about the female, the female's role in the group or the family.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Yes.
I think we're going to have a really cool, I know we're going to have a really cool conversation. I'm really excited, but I don't want to jump the gun. I appreciate what you just did, Marco, is we want to bring our audience into this conversation too.
Yeah.
We've all been working with wildlife for a very long time. We know all these terms. And so to set the stage for our audience, I want to point out what I think a lot of the general public already knows, which is lions are a great example. You know, the big king of the jungle, he's got the mane and he's a tough guy, right? Mm-hmm. Or this big silverback gorilla. And we look at those and think, okay, the male lion's in charge of the pride and the silverback is in charge of the troop of gorillas, but we start to break this down a little bit. Yes, those boys do protect the family, but it's the females making the decisions. For lions, for example,
right,
when to hunt, where to hunt. They teach the younger females how to hunt. The pride moves because the females are deciding, okay, these other animals we're hunting are migrating, so we're going to go as well. So yeah, the boy does protect, the big male lion does protect, but it's the females that are making the big calls underneath the surface, you know, really making the movers and shakers. And we see similar stuff with the gorillas as well. It's those females deciding on where the proper food is for the troop, where they should go, taking care of the young and then teaching the young as they come up where the proper places are to eat. When is this food ripe versus not ripe? So we start to look at it that way, even with the groups of animals that are considered male dominated or male led. There's really a lot more the females are doing for that species than sometimes we give them credit for.
My family's from Mexico, as an example. And, you know, we always make the joke, it's the father, he's the one running the roost. But we always make the joke like, no, really, it's Ma who is in control of all of it. But to your point, right, the rhino, the elephant, the lion, we were saying, are excellent examples of that. But there's much more going on, the complexities of those social dynamics, right? Behavior-wise, you were talking about, right, Frenda, there's so much more nuance that the females of these species are adding to the survival of that particular animal.
Right. And again, I think it's really about looking at those different behaviors and what is the purpose of those behaviors. And, you know, Rick, you just mentioned about gorillas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we put these behaviors in boxes and what we see traditionally for male and female, what their roles are. And I wanted to share a little story because I think Winston, our silverback at the safari park, is such a great example of, you know, what we know of a traditional silverback is very dominant. They display aggressive behaviors. I would say he's not a typical silverback. And, you know, he has a troop of females that he leads. And one of the wildlife care specialists said to me one day, you know, Winston is the best in all of us.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. And I said, wow, I think Winston has something to teach all of humanity. He is just such a great representative for the human race. And the reason why I say that is he leads through respect. He leads through care and kindness. He definitely makes sure that the troop, the females are all behaving. And when they are a little unrest, you know, he makes sure that he balances the females out.
Right.
He's very tolerant. He lets the little ones, you know, get away with a lot. But he just, he's not the typical male behavior that you see. And so that's what I love to watch the behavior and see, you know, he doesn't have to display those behaviors, right? And so I wouldn't describe him as a typical silverback aggressive behaviors. He displays behavior that is needed for his troop.
Yeah, that's great, you guys. It makes me think even bonobo, right? I mean, one of our closest cousins. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I'm always so fascinated with that topic of that societal difference between chimpanzees and bonobos.
Yes.
And we all know, but it's based on a female structure, relationships, tactile, touching, cuddling, sharing food.
Yeah, the food sharing between them is like the big social connection.
And to your point, you know, attributing those animal behaviors to our own human behaviors, well, we could learn a lot from bonobo or a gorilla, you know, that respect.
Yes, and the bonobos, the females coming together.
Yes.
And working together are far more greater against one male than, say, chimps working against each other through using aggression. Yeah. I mean, you can do a lot more through working together, through influence and positivity, than you can through violence.
I am loving this trend, you guys. Talk about girl power.
Exactly. And I wanted to jump back to what you said about Winston not being the typical. I love the fact that wildlife always shows us there's always an exception to whatever rule.
Like, yeah. Yes.
Whatever you might think about any species, there's always going to be one of them out there that's like, well, or we could do it this way. You know? And I love that about Winston. You brought up, too, earlier the matriarchal stuff. And one thing I'm really excited about, too, Christy, is that you're bringing to the table something we don't normally get to talk about, which is killer whales. We'll get to them in a second, though. Mm-hmm. I want to ease into that because we did mention the term matriarchal. And although we talked about and referenced the gorillas and the lions, but the dominant males, the matriarchals that we do know, a lot of people in general public knows that elephants are matriarchal. It's the female that leads the way, does all the stuff. You know, it's her offspring that tend to follow in place, or her sisters, whatever it may be. But then a lot of people may not know meerkats and lemurs are also matriarchal with one female in charge. She does mate selection. Her boy, her male partner, only gets his status because she has selected him. And it's just an interesting thing that there are a lot more species out there that are matriarchal or female-led than the average person might know about.
Yeah, 100%. You know I'm going to bring a bird up, you guys. So I'm going to I'm going to do
please,
it right now.
Please.
Let's talk about a cassowary love life. I'll give you the shortest version. I mean, this female, way bigger than the male, 6 foot tall, weighs over 100 pounds. Her territory encompasses a variety of different males in that territory. Yeah. When it's breeding season, that male is going to try to call this female over. Now, he's got to think about consent. And we talked about this in the first episode of the Cobra. Reading the behavior, right, friend? Reading the behavior, right? Gets a green light from the female. So they copulate. She drops those eggs. And she is done. And she moves off. She's a career girl. She's got things to do. She moves
good
off, finds
her
another male, right? And all that structure, he raises the babies. Yeah. So I just love that different nuance of behavior with wildlife, from a mammal to a bird.
Yeah,
to,
absolutely.
And even our marine wildlife as well, right? And you're referencing the killer whale also. All these interesting dynamics that females play in these roles.
Absolutely. It's amazing how animals came to be the way they are, right?
Yeah. Right?
They know a lot more than we do.
Totally.
Yes.
Well, with that then, the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance has been doing a lot of work with our partners, the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. And together we're working to make sure there's the proper health for the killer whales out there, using new technology to be able to gain samples that otherwise, just even 5-10 years ago, we couldn't imagine doing this work. But with drones now, not only can capture this information, we can do real-time studies on it to make sure these animals are healthy. With that, you have a vast knowledge of killer whales as well. Speaking on this topic of matriarchal and dominancy versus leadership, let's, and no pun intended, dive into killer whales.
He loves those puns, Frank. Get ready. Get ready.
I swear, I heard it coming. I didn't mean it.
Good one, Rick. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled that the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance is partnering with this really important work with the Southern Resident Pod. They are an endangered group, and this is really important work. I have been very passionate about this work, and they are an incredible species to learn from. They're a matriarchal society. And I think one of the things that's just so fascinating about this species is that I would ask people when they would look at killer whales, like, who do you think is the most dominant animal? Mm. And they would always, always say, oh, that large male, you know, that 10,000 pound male, he's in charge. And I said, no, it's actually her right there, the little, you know, 5,000 pound female.
Preach.
And they thought, wow, there's no way. So it's very interesting. And all the animals that we've been talking about today, it's very different, very variable.
Right. Yes.
Which, again, I love the diversity, right?
Diversity.
That different animals, different females, some of them are larger. You know, hyena, the females are larger than the males.
Another good one.
You just talked about the cassowary. The females are very large. But in other species like the killer whales, the females tend to be smaller in size. So,
I didn't know that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And to be an apex predator, you guys?
Apex predator.
And by that, I mean, like, they're the top of the food chain, everyone. Yes. In case you're wondering, right? And you're, to that point, right, it's female-based, and they're the top predator in the ocean. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's all about attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, you know, they're incredible species, and also what's really, really interesting about them is that they live in pods. The females that obviously grow up with the other females, they're learning those behaviors. So in my work with them, you would have the dominant, the matriarch, and you would have her offspring, who is maybe 1,000 pounds, a little calf, be displaying, you know, these matriarchal behaviors because she had mom there to back her up.
Right, right.
So you'd see this 10,000-pound bull and this little tiny baby displaying dominance over this giant bull. It was just, it was really interesting to watch that dynamic. And of course, he would respect the calf because he knew mom was right around the corner, and they know to respect because that's the matriarch's offspring.
I can hear somebody in our audience asking, how does it work that a smaller female can be dominant over a larger male or bull, as you said? So
yes.
What is it? Because I believe in general, you go to the safari park, the tallest male giraffe is the one in charge.
Right.
You know, the big bull of the water buffalo is the one that's leading the group. You know, we always think it's the big one who creates that dominant space because of their sheer size. But the dynamic is very different here. So can you expand on that for us?
It's all about behavior, right? You see different ways that they swim, the way they use their tail, they use their teeth to rake one another. So you watch the behavior of them and you'll see animals move away from one another. You just see them display certain dominance behavior. So we would sometimes say, like, not that they can hear you, but say, like, do you realize how big you are? And, you know, they know it's a respect. They know that, okay, I'm going to respect that small animal because they have to.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit anthropomorphic or putting human behaviors onto it, but it almost sounds like you're saying it's about the attitude.
Yes.
The attitude backs up the behavior or vice versa. I'm imagining the classic honey badger facing off with a lion and the lion backing off.
Oh,
you know, the lion is huge compared to the honey badger, but it's 100%. That attitude. So I almost feel, is that a fair assessment?
That's a great comparison. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow. Even the value of that makes me think of the culture of that pod, right? They're preserving these essential tools for hunting. I'm a huge predator fan, so that's where my brain is going behaviorally. These traits have to be taught to the next generation. So it's valuable for the young orca or killer whale, my apologies, to learn from the dominant female and get those traits to pass it on to the future of that pod, right?
That's right.
Well, with that too, though, what Marco was just saying about the learning from the mother.
Yes.
We see that in elephants too. And a lot of studies have been done that if we lose the matriarch to poaching and the other older females, that the herd kind of loses its history. It loses, like, where's my migratory pattern? Where are the feeding stops and the watering holes? Is that something we would see in killer whales as well? If the dominant or matriarchal female were to be lost in that pod, if her information hadn't been transferred down to her young yet, is it possible that pod loses its opportunities to rely on the history of her knowledge?
You know, I think it's different. It depends on which pod you're speaking of, because you have two different types of killer whales, and also killer whales are found in every ocean of the world.
Right.
So it would be very dependent on what group of killer whales that you were talking about, because the southern resident pod, they are mainly salmon eaters. So yes, they're looking for the salmon, which is a huge issue for them, right? Because they're not only looking for salmon, which is not accessible to them, but also the salmon is filled with toxins, which is another issue that they're dealing with. But, you know, a lot of people think that we were talking earlier about killer whale, and the reason why they got their name is that they're killer of other whales.
Yeah.
But not all killer whales prey on dolphins and whales. The southern resident pods, they mainly prey on fish. But the transient whales are whales that move along our coasts. In fact, I'm seeing a lot of information on social media of killer whales moving from Mexico up through California, which has been amazing for people who live in California, because we don't normally see killer whales along our coast, but they are moving because they're trying to find food sources. And the transient whales are the ones that are preying on dolphins, sea lions, and seals. So different areas that those killer whales live in are looking for those animals.
Wow.
So they're not relying on a matriarch to go and find. They're literally moving, just trying to find any food source. But southern resident pods, yes, they live in certain areas. They don't leave those areas, but they move around different areas and look for the salmon. So yes, I think there could potentially be an issue if they lost their matriarch too soon.
That brings up another point. There's so many different behaviors seen in different residential areas of these killer whales. You said they're in all oceans, but you know, these behave this way, these behave that way. And it's so fascinating. The more we learn about these species, the more we get to talk to people like you, Christian, the more it's like, oh, but wait a minute, what about that? And there's just like question after question. So I really appreciate the information you're bringing to us. And it's just one of those things where I'm hopeful that this episode is an opportunity for people to look at animal behavior. And instead of just going down the classic, oh, that's the dominant male or that's whatever, is to question, like, what am I seeing? Yeah. Why is this behavior happening? And the other part of it, too, it's sometimes the one in charge isn't even the matriarch. Sometimes decisions are made by the secondary or whomever, you know, so there's that layer, too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes we can make is that we think that the most submissive animal is oftentimes is not the most submissive animal. Oftentimes it's the next animal in charge. It's the animal that the most dominant animal is trying to keep at bay from taking over. So you have to have more observations and more understanding of what's going on and why are animals engaging in that behavior?
Right.
Which then can tie into human behavior, right? Behavior is a function of consequence. And so the more that you can observe and try and understand, there are no bad people, there are no bad, you know, animals. It's all about behavior and trying to understand why someone's doing something. Why are they engaging in that? I think will tell you what you need to fix and what you need to offer.
Yeah,
100%. So much we can learn from wildlife. Thank you so much for making our brains work. Now I have so many more questions here. So this is really, really great, friend.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Chris. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, I loved it. Anytime.
What a great conversation with Christy.
Oh, I know. I mean, she's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, so much great insight into leadership versus dominancy in the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. And I love how she reminded all of us that it's the observation of behavior that really gives us the information we need to better understand wildlife.
Exactly. And although there is a lot more out there when it comes to how different species interact with each other or who leads the group, troop, hive, herd, or flock, I think it's fair to say we learned a lot today.
And not just about the matriarchal leadership, but also how these leadership positions can be passed down from mother to daughter. Instead of leadership just being taken by, you know, brute force, it's something that is taught by the elders and learned by the next generation.
Well, here we are, only episode 2 in this season, and already you and I are both fascinated by what our guests are bringing to each episode.
That is 100% true, friend. And our next episode promises to be just as interesting.
Ah, what a perfect segue, a lead-in, if you will, to wrapping up this episode. And we want to remind everyone to subscribe and tune into our next episode in which we learn more about the ongoing efforts of butterfly conservation and how you can help protect these amazing pollinators.
I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. Thanks for listening. For more information about the San Diego Zoo and San Diego Zoo Safari Park, go to sdzwa.org. Amazing Wildlife is a production of iHeartRadio. Our supervising producers are Nakia Swinton and Dylan Fagan, and our sound designers are Sierra Spreen and Matt Russell. For more shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.